Hello and good morning. This is Faithfully Memphis from the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee, and today is... What is the date today? I'm not even sure. That's how crazy we're feeling this morning. It is November 11th, 2021. And I am Emily Austin from the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee. And I am so glad that you are joining us this morning. And I am especially excited to have several really, really awesome, amazing people who I think personally a lot of on the show this morning. Hello, Lavani and Swayzu.
Hello.
Good morning.
How are y'all doing?
Great.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. And we've also got Mother Kim, the very Reverend Mother Kim from the Union of Black Episcopalians on the air with us this morning. Good morning, Mother Kim. Well, let's just start introducing ourselves. In the studio, I have Dr. Lavani Claiborne and Dr. Swayzu Claiborne, and they are here located in Memphis, but they're also members of St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Mason, Tennessee. Will y'all introduce yourselves and tell me a little bit about yourselves and share with, and I will go back and say that right before we went on the air, Swayzu and Lavani have been married for, how long have y'all been married?
29 years.
And Lavani told me that when they were walking up into the studio this morning, that she actually had a dream. Was it right before y'all got married? Or that she had a dream that one day they would be on the radio together. And so, I mean, if that's not a prophetic statement and what you're in for this morning, I don't know what is. But y'all, you tell me your story.
My name is Lavani Perry Claiborne, and I guess I'll tell you just a little bit about me professionally. I'm a former director of the Mid-South Access Center for Technology at the University of Memphis, and an adjunct faculty in the Instruction and Curriculum Leadership Department. But I'm currently working as an instructional technology trainer in the UM3D program at the University of Memphis. So the University of Memphis is like a second family to us. In the community, I am the Southeast Regional Director of the Union of Black Episcopalian. And most dear to my heart is our Project CARES outreach program that we run through the St. Paul's Episcopal Church, and it's a tutoring and enrichment program for at-risk youth, and it's a literacy program, and our motto is leadership through literacy. And so we just feel privileged and honored that to have been chosen to carry on the educational and enrichment initiatives in the rural areas of our diocese. And we're just very blessed to be able to be a part of that ministry.
Thank you, Lavani.
Okay, I am professionally director of the Office of Facilities Development at the University of Memphis. I'm not a doctor, but I'm a director.
You may as well be.
I'm a director, that's close.
You may as well be. You spent enough time with one.
That's true. I'm a lifelong Episcopalian, at least fourth generation, senior warden and lay Eucharistic minister at St. Paul's Episcopal Church. Beyond that, I serve on the Diocesan Standing Committee, and I'm the local president of the Right Reverend Bishop Thomas E. Demby chapter of the Union of Black Episcopalians for the Greater Memphis Area.
Wonderful, wonderful. Mother Kim, tell us all about yourself.
Certainly. I am the president of the National Union of Black Episcopalians, now in my third year in that role. In addition to that, as vocationally, I am the rector of Trinity Church in Arlington, Virginia. Have just celebrated my 20th year anniversary.
Congratulations.
With that community of faith. Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
and for the Diocese of Virginia, serve as their Archdean, as well as the chaplain of the ECW Episcopal Church Women. I'm particularly delighted to serve the Union of Black Episcopalians. We're doing tremendous work to advocate and serve people of brown and black hues within the Episcopal Church. And we have a mighty team of people from all backgrounds and cultures who come together to make sure that those who are often left out of the table are sitting there at the table participating in the life of the church.
So, you know, a lot of the folks who might be tuning into Faithfully Memphis today may not know very much about the Episcopal Church, much less the way our denomination is structured. We are a denominational church, and we're part of the Anglican Communion, which is the Church of England. You'll find Anglican and Episcopal churches all over the globe. And the Union of Black Episcopalians is, I mean, explain to me from y'all's perspective, and Mother Kim, we are so lucky to have you on the air this morning to kind of talk about the need for an organization and for a body that is creating that space within a denomination and a, you know, American church that has had major problems with confronting segregation and inequality within our own pews. Can you talk a little bit to that and why your work is so necessary?
Absolutely. I think people in general and recognizing that our audience are not all Episcopalians. In the Episcopal Church, the presumption is often made and statements said that we are a white church. And that's just historically not correct, right. nor is right. it correct in the current configuration of the church.
Right.
Since the first Black, predominantly, exclusively Black congregation, the Episcopal Church of St. Thomas was established in 1792 in Philadelphia with Absalom Jones as the first Black priest.
Yes.
Since then, we have recognized and acknowledged what has been the case within the Anglican Church in these United States that we call the Episcopal Church. And that is that there have always been enslaved people initially who were members of the church, or at least allowed to sit in the balcony.
Right.
And then over the generations, over 200 some years, we have continued to be actively involved in the life of the church.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is because this organization, UBE, has been the primary galvanizing agent behind, let's recognize and let's nurture and let's form and shape people for profound leadership to be able to add a voice that's sometimes missing, Emily, quite honestly.
Right,
It's just it missing. So that's what we do. And especially now, pandemics of racism.
Yes.
The pandemic of coronavirus, you know, all of these situations that are heightening the distinctions between people and often leaving persons of color bereft or in a less vibrant place of life. We need advocates. We need people that will be on the forefront doing whatever is possible to make sure that voices are not heard, lives are not lost, and that all people are celebrated. That's what UBE does.
And Lavani and Swayzu, how is that, you know, y'all are both extremely, not just active, but leadership here within our region in the UBE. Talk a little bit about how you see that mission that Mother Kim is describing. How is that playing out, especially in at St. Paul's in Mason?
One of the initiatives that we talked about earlier was Project CARES.
Yeah.
And for us, that is something that is just in the DNA at St. Paul's.
Yeah.
Suezu has more knowledge than I do about Gaylor Industrial School and the history of St. Paul that he wanted to share.
Yeah.
But with Project CARES, it is our mission to foster an inclusive culture and to make individuals who are at-risk students feel that they have value, they have worth, and to expose them to various enrichment activities. Mm-hmm. We have tutoring programs. We had to transition last year from land-based to online, and that was quite a feat. But,
yeah.
We have a wonderful team in the community as well. We are funded by the, partially funded by the Church Home Foundation mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. donations from the Gaylor Mason community. So it is, it's just part of that, making sure that our children have access to information and resources. So when they're told at the schools that they do not qualify to participate in AP programs, for example,
yeah.
we arrange for them to be able to get tutored, to get information, mm-hmm. to get ACT scores. We've had students who have gone on to become occupational therapists,
uh-huh.
Students who have participated in our programs who started out with a 16 on the ACT and before they ended with 27, so they were
wow.
scholarship range.
Wow.
So for us, it's about enrichment, exposing the kids to different genres of literature, different genres of music,
yeah.
careers. It's just access to information and resources so that, as our bishop always reminds us, that we don't leave out those who are the least, the lost, or the left behind.
That's right. That's the church. That's mm-hmm. what we're called
yes.
to do.
Yes.
Can you all talk to me, describe St. Paul's Mason to someone who may not have ever known that this church even exists? And see, when I have to admit that I am such a classic Memphian in that whenever I hear Mason, Tennessee, can y'all guess what I think of?
Bozo's
Pit Barbecue. You know, when you're driving yeah. on your way to Nashville or to Jackson or wherever, you gotta make a literal pit stop yeah. at Bozo's. But
and the original Gus's.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like right across the street, right yeah. across the road, right?
Almost. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So tell me about this congregation and what people can expect to find when they find there. I mean, we know that y'all are doing some amazing outreach work that we're going to talk more about, but tell me more about the church.
Well, being a fourth or fifth generation Episcopalian, I've really had a clear picture of the trajectory of Episcopal life, you know, mm-hmm. as an Episcopalian, from beginnings of slavery, not
yeah.
beginnings of slavery, but the ending of slavery, all the way until now.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that trajectory, there is a lived experience that helps us to understand perspectives, as Mother Kim mentioned, that maybe everyone may not be aware of. And I think that lived experience has really led me to be active and be a part of the Union of Black Episcopalians. And if we have a couple of minutes, I'd love to go through
yes,
kind
please.
Of that trajectory.
Tell me all the things.
Well, in 1847, there were four infants that were baptized in the church that became Holy Trinity Episcopal Church in Mason.
Mm-hmm.
In 1850, there were two slaves confirmed in the church. By the end of slavery, there were over 40 slaves in that ministry. So in 1873, St. Paul's Episcopal Church made the transition from a slave organization that was part of the Trinity Church
yeah.
to having its own church and having it admitted in the Episcopal Diocese of Tennessee.
Wow.
And unfortunately, a lot of the congregations didn't make that transition.
Yeah.
1880, a day school was started with 138 students by a former Meharry Medical College instructor, and he was a ordained deacon, Isaac Black. In 1898, Thomas Edward Denby became the ordained deacon and principal at the St. Paul's Day School in Mason. He later became a priest and suffragan bishop, and in fact, the first African-American Episcopal bishop in the United States.
Wow.
1911, many of the female students became part of St. Mary's School for Colored Girls that moved to a 100-acre site approximately 2 miles east of Mason.
Mm.
And they had programs that were focused on religious instruction, homemaking, and teaching. 1921, the boys entered the school, and those programs included scientific farming, carpentry, and construction. Hoffman St. Mary's was renamed Gaylor Industrial School that year, in 1921, in honor of the support from Bishop Gaylor. 1941, Old St. Paul's location closed, and that congregation began a merger with St. Mary's on the campus of Gaylor Industrial School. 1954, St. Paul's Chapel was built to support the campus ministry. And then in 1965, Gaylor Industrial School closed and was sold to Tipton County. And, you know, I think the key point is that St. Paul's Episcopal Church has always been heavily involved in education, supported,
yes,
I think, very strongly by the Episcopal Diocese. And we continue to carry out that legacy of education.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've always kind of been aware of the amazing work that you and Lavani are spearheading at St. Paul's Mason. But to hear that heritage and how it has always been rooted, and how that love of education and that pursuit of education has always been rooted in pulling people who have been tremendously, just every disadvantage has been thrown at them. The fact that it's the educational efforts are motivated by that love and that commitment to, you know, what Jesus calls the least of these. I just that gives me chills.
And we have to also say that we just feel honored. We think of Mrs. Priscilla Cochran and when she and her husband, and Swayzu knows the story more than I do, but I've heard it numerous times, but how they came from North Carolina and Georgia on the train, and how they came there to help start Gaylor Industrial School.
Yeah.
Mr. Cochran was a principal. Mrs. Cochran was an English teacher. And my husband's father, Swayzu Claiborne Sr., was a math teacher and aunts. And then, Swayzu, did you go to Gaylor Industrial School?
I did not.
Okay.
So, but there were 3/4 of my family became teachers as a result of their experiences there.
So I hear the stories about how those two people got off of the train and felt called to actually help build Gaylor Industrial School. So Ms. Cochran, it's just ironic. We think about all the times when we have enrichment programs with the kids and we're teaching how to knit, or we've had some other programs for the kids. Ms. Cochran was always very influential, and I did have the honor to actually know her before she transitioned. So it's just an honor, and to be able to go into the community, and St. Paul is a very supportive community.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very small congregation, but you would not know it because everyone gives 200% and just serving others.
Yeah.
And everybody in that community still recognizes it as the Gaylor community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mother Kim, as you listen to Lavani and Swayzu describe the lineage and the history of St. Paul's, can you place that within the context of the overall work and things that you're seeing happen from your vantage point as as the leadership in the Union of Black Episcopalians?
Oh, yes. They provide us with the epitome of the heart of the Union, the sharing of the story, the preserving of history, the furtherance of development and nurturing and support of Black people, people of color, people who are sometimes often in this country disenfranchised. Sharing those stories and keeping them alive is part of the work of the Union. When you talk about Black congregations, when you talk about the Union of Episcopalian chapters, you're talking about organizations and structures that have been put in place and that continue to, at a local level, have the impact that we need in order for our world to change. And so that's kind of the dualistic system that we have going at the Union of Black Episcopalians. We have the national headquarters up in, as I said, uh-huh. up in Alexandria, but uh-huh. we've got local chapters around the Episcopal Church, the Bishop Demby chapter, for example, that both Swezu and Lavani are involved with, and many more across that are doing the on-the-ground work. And part of the job of the national headquarters is to make sure that story is preserved. We take for granted where we've come as the Episcopal Church.
Yeah.
We see female bishops, we mm-hmm. see Black bishops, we see people that are at every level of the operation, but there was a process for yeah. making that happen. Mm-hmm. And so what they're talking about is evidence of the need, the relevance of having these Black congregations and or chapters of UBE, mm-hmm. which of course is not an exclusively Black organization, but you know, that's our early beginnings. But that's the relevance of having those chapters, and the work they do perpetuates the story
yes.
That we need to be hearing so yes. that we understand that persons of color are not a secondary or a non-essential element of our life as a communion. No, we're thankful. And they're just one piece of evidence of what's happening across this Episcopal Church in these United States and beyond. And that's a very important part that they're playing.
I agree. And, speaking from my heart, you know, I'm a white female cisgendered Episcopalian woman, and I have a 9-year-old daughter, and I think a lot about what it means that my daughter sees not only my boss but the leader of our local diocese is a Black female bishop, and sometimes I sit with what a blessing that is, that she gets to see that and she gets to live in a world where that is that is normal. But I think that as a white person, honestly, I get real comfortable in that. And I don't think that comfort is good. Mm-hmm. I think that the moment that comfort sets in, that like, oh, look at us, we are part of a church that is progressive, and we are pushing for, things that are advocating for those who have been traditionally marginalized. If we think that that work is over, that just means that we need to do harder work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I, you know, think about how, you know, in our larger churches, it's so easy to pat ourselves on the back and say, oh, look at the wonderful work that we're doing. But at the end of the day, we really need to reflect on how long, as a, you know, white, a predominantly white church, how long we did not allow and how long we continue to not allow people at the table. Mm-hmm. What is it that, what kind of work? And I say this more as a rhetorical question, that you know, white people need to be asking themselves, what do we need to be doing to open up our hearts and open up our doors and find a place at the table? That is my prayer. And that is what I sit with every day.
Right. It is not enough to resurrect Lazarus.
That's right.
Jesus commands, take off those grave wrappings.
That's right.
Let him free, let him loose, right? Right. And so that's just evidence for us all as Christians that our work does not end when we have, you know, brought to life again something that was dead by sin.
That's right.
It doesn't end there. There are things that we still have to do and work that must be completed. So I agree with you, and the temptation to settle into a comfort zone, right?
Yeah.
And the world will not allow us to do that.
No.
As tragic as the passing of the death of George Floyd was, the repercussions of people's awareness of people's mobilization to make concrete differences that came about, and I will say UBE's role of putting that story out, letting people know, you know, these are some steps that you can take to make a difference in your location, in your families, in your churches, in your communities, in our world, therefore. That was a horrible situation, but I'm thankful to God for the grace that allowed us to see it and wake up to it and re-examine ourselves from that place of comfort to which we might have grown.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lavani, tell us, you know, you started describing the outreach work that is happening and has been happening at St. Paul's Mason for quite some time. Will you describe that a little bit more and how, you know, how the pandemic impacted that?
Certainly. I'll have to tell you that we've always had to really overcome obstacles with meeting the needs and even encouraging youth in the area to participate in the program. We used to have the sessions there at St. Paul. We would be on campus, and the kids would we would have our tutoring sessions, our stations.
And these are after school tutoring, and
yes, in the evenings and on Saturdays, and sometimes on Sundays.
And what's the age bracket?
Well, initially we started out with K through 19. Now we focus primarily on middle schoolers and high schoolers.
Man, those are the years.
And then we also have an extension program that we started. That one of our youth had an idea about, actually athletes who were trying to get scholarships to go to school, but they were not able to make a certain score on the ACT, so we started up an extension to the program. But we always had that issue, and St. Paul, we got it started in 2008 with Dr. Jerry Scott, and she transitioned in 2017, and I call her my Memphis mom.
Yeah.
But she was an educational professor at the University of Memphis. So she helped us to develop the program, and it has just been flourishing, and we would do have people to come out. We have a core staff that we have, not staff, but core volunteers, and Dr. Madhu, who was just the Presidential Scholar Teacher of the Year in Math and Science.
Wow.
He's also an AP teacher at White Station High School. He's been with us for years. We had Dr. Lori Cahoon. She's an English professor at the University of Memphis as a core faculty. Her parents moved with her, and her father was a retired math professor, but he was an individual who had Parkinson's disease. So it was a joy for the children also to be able to learn how to interact with people who had disabilities as well. So that was something, and her mother was a retired nurse. And so we have core faculty, core people, and we kind of have other volunteers around them to help develop the program. But during the pandemic, it was quite an ordeal. We were trying to figure out with the drop of a dime how to transition from being in person to online. We had to try to find resources for our children to borrow.
Yeah.
We purchased a subscription to Zoom,
mm-hmm.
and with the breakout rooms. So we started transitioning, having sessions in the breakout rooms and using different, learning to use different types of tools to be able to facilitate instruction online, like the DecoPen and some other things.
Yeah, I don't even know what that is.
So we've just kind of learned along the way. But one of the issues that we've had is that our children would have, because of where they're located, internet access.
That digital divide.
Yeah, it's a digital divide. And so they would drop from, and we tell them, don't worry about it, just get back on. So just a lot of flexibility.
Yeah.
A lot of the kids were accessing information from phones.
Yeah.
We were loaning laptops to them.
Yeah.
We had recently an individual young lady who wanted to participate in the program, but her internet access is just horrible.
Yeah.
So one of our parishioners stepped up to the plate, and we also have Miss Barbara Williams, who mm-hmm. helps with our programs as well. And she's a parishioner at St. Paul's, but she actually lives here in Memphis.
Yeah.
And she actually has been instrumental in helping us to locate some other resources to possibly get hotspots for our children and things of that nature. So we've had obstacles. One of the main obstacles is also motivation.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of our children have really felt that they cannot do. They do not have the aptitude to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
So it is just incumbent upon us to just encourage them, to inspire them, and to just provide them some success in letting them know that they can be. We have also had in 2019, pre-pandemic, we took part of our kids and got them enrolled in a free program at Tennessee Tech University, where they were able to go and look at the different careers in engineering.
Yeah.
As a result of that and some of the other initiatives, we had started a program called Girls on a Mission STEM Group.
Yeah.
And these were some girls that, as a result of the enrichment activities, said, hey, I want to go into engineering. And so they were able to start this. And we had another lady who had volunteered, and we were able to go have some FedEx tours and some things of that nature. And one of those young ladies wanted to become a statistician. So, and she said she had never even heard of it. And as a result of that, learning how to program and some other things, it has just really changed the lives.
It's just making the world bigger for young people and showing them that there is a place for every single person. I think that education and just exposure shows you that there is a place for every single person. I mean, if that's not an analogy for God's kingdom, I don't know what is. Tell me now, I also know that the work that y'all have been doing, it's not just here in Shelby County and Mason, and it's not just in the United States. Tell me a little bit about the Uganda Project.
Wow. Okay.
Take a deep breath. Maybe we need to go to a break.
Well, one of the things that we want our young people to know is that education is not, having educational opportunities is not just a given.
Mm-hmm.
We want them to know that locally and globally that there are obstacles that everyone has to overcome. With the Uganda Project, one of our parishioners at St. Paul's, Dr. Bamwini, he's also faculty at Lemoyne Owen, he's from Uganda,
mm-hmm.
and he approached us with this project. And some of the girls at Uganda are not able to go to school when they have their cycle during the month. And so we have a project that we are collaborating with the Denby chapter and the UBE community and the Mason Gala community to collect funds to be able to buy the necessary things that these young ladies would be able to use during that time of the month. And that sounds like it's a simple project, but it's very, very critical to these young ladies being able to continue to go to school during that period. So, and it also motivates, hopefully, our kids to be able to say, hey, I really have an opportunity here and I need to do that.
To serve. Yeah. I want to kind of go back to basics for a minute. How all the work that the three of you are doing right now in your lives, how do you trace your faith through that, through as in the big picture, from, you know, your youth into where you are now? Mother Kim, do you want to weigh in first on that very big question?
Sure. I called her Nana. She is my maternal grandmother, and she began at an early age telling us, if you ever need help, call on Jesus. Just call on Jesus. And so from my early years, my family were in the Baptist tradition. My dad's side was United Methodist, but my mother's side of the family were Baptist. And I continued in that tradition prior to becoming an Episcopalian in my early 20s. So it's that family rootedness in Christianity and church attendance that plays itself out even now as I continue in my love of God and Christ Jesus. So that's it. All I can say is Nana.
It's Nana. It's everybody has to have a grandmother or a maternal figure in their life who modeled just, you know, we need our older folks in our lives showing us the way.
She would come to visit us and leave because she had to go back to do the women's groups program for the month of August or something like that. So I knew from her what sacrifice meant in terms of Christian service and what it was to be a woman who was a powerful preacher and a lover of God who had limitations and restrictions on how she could serve in the church.
Yeah. Swayzu?
Well, for me, I have the benefit of growing up in a household where I actually saw my father. He was good at categorizing things, you know, and so and I personally kind of developed this perspective on the three C's: Christian life, community, and creation care. And those things are things that I think we're called to develop, you know, and in community, I kind of look at communication and unity. And I think about this scripture in 1 Corinthians that says, in the name of Jesus, there should be no divisions. And so I'm always listening to people, encouraging, and those things give me motivation. And in many cases, in Project Cares, for example, just listening to the parents, you know, and it makes me realize that there's so much suffering and challenge and need. And those things just encourage me, you know. I mean, I'm encouraged by the word and encouraged to continue to try to do those things to relieve the suffering where I can.
So for me, I call them significant others. And there have been numerous significant others in my life, but my mother, Mary E. Perry, and she's a civil rights activist, a strong just servant of the Lord. And when I was younger, I went to a lot of meetings with my mother, and civil rights meetings, community meetings, meetings, taking my mother makes soup and pie and takes it through the community to help people. And so I just grew up just with that attitude that we all had a specific purpose in life.
Yeah.
And that when God gifts us with some gifts, it's not for us.
Right. Right.
That we are to share right. those gifts and use them to build up his kingdom.
Yeah.
And so that's a lot of significant others, my brother, my sister, my father, and because my father wanted to make sure that I knew how to work on cars and do carpentry work, as well as do a little bit of everything. He said he wanted to make sure that you were well-rounded. So that's why.
Well, if anybody, if I had to create a top five list of people I know who are well-rounded, you're definitely on that list.
So we just, it's just a, and it is a joy. We can be tired.
Yeah.
And when we sign on in the evenings with to work with the kids, or I was just on a UBE meeting last night, and it was supposed to be a 45-minute meeting, Mother Kim. We were on for 2 hours, but we were laughing and working on a very special project for our region, and that is dear to our heart, that will help us communicate with our communities. And it's just a joy. It's not work. That's all I can say.
Yeah,
It's just embedded, and we just feel that we were called to do this, and that it's a joy to serve others.
What is the saying that, you know, if you find a job you like, you'll never work a day in your life?
Right.
I feel that.
Yes.
I feel that when I talk to you all. I think that it's that joy and that motivation to, like you said, extend that kingdom of heaven. You know, we're already living in a time where Jesus is here and Jesus is alive, and, you know, just being able to live into that and to preach that through our actions as well as our words.
Right.
That's our number one calling, I think.
And we're just very fortunate to have a community here in our diocese of very supportive other congregations as well. The entire diocese is as well. But we want to make sure that we mention Emmanuel Episcopal Church, because Emmanuel Episcopal Church and St. Paul's Episcopal Church, and then Christ City and Forest City, Arkansas, for over 40 years, isn't it, Swayzu? We've had our annual Black Church Picnic, and we support each other in ministries. I know that Emmanuel has several ministries and programs, and they're very active in the Denby chapter. Mm-hmm. So we just are very fortunate to, it just seems like whatever we need that God positions us to do, he provides the resources, and we're very thankful for that.
Well, in that vein, I got to ask, you know, as we're kind of running into our time, first, how can we learn more? How can folks listening right now learn more about the work at St. Paul's Mason and the Denby chapter of the Union of Black Episcopalians? How can we learn more, and how can we support what you're doing? How can we help?
Well, I'll speak for the outreach initiatives that we have at St. Paul's. We have a website, and one of our current websites is projectcares.weebly.com, where we have information about our tutoring programs there. But also, just to reach out to us, and there's some contact information there that you can get for that. But in terms of the UBE chapter region-wide, as Mother Kim mentioned, we have some wonderful programs and a wonderful team, and that covers several areas, states within, I think it's North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, Georgia. And so we want to make sure that we have some great initiatives going on. We are working to increase the support and collaboration of historically Black universities. So we ask everyone to support our Black university, Episcopal universities, and they are, that would be Voorhees in South Carolina and St. Augustine's in Raleigh, North Carolina. And we are exploring mentorship models to encourage, further encourage youth participation. And so we just ask that if you have some experience and some resources that you're willing to allow to be a part of some of the initiatives that we have. The Denby chapter just recently had a campaign for that Swayzu can tell you a little bit more about and some things of that nature. So we just ask you to support us in prayer, resources, time, ideas, and so with
Swayzu.
I think the simplest way is by website. And I think the Project CARES website would be the best way to plug in with that program and reach out to other contacts and individuals from there. Email addresses, my email address also is available, and sclaybon2@aol is my email, and from there I think our UBE website would be the best place if someone is interested in supporting the UBE program.
Mother Kim, the UBE is all over social media, right?
Yes, we are. We are. As a matter of fact, Dr. Levani spearheads the group.
I had a feeling that there was going to be a little bit of a crossover there.
Yes, yes. That is there to put the word out over social media. And we've been working very hard to build that base and expand it, particularly during COVID-19. But people, I'm going to extend your comment to say, but people that want to connect with UBE and to benefit from some of the information and knowledge that we put out there can always go to our website at ube.org, plain and simple. Or you can register for one of the monthly programs we do on the third Sunday.
Y'all are always doing wonderful just webinars and different curricula.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think I would like to just add, you had asked Dr. Levani and Swayzu about what can be done to support the ministry there. I want to say that at this critical time in our nation's history, my encouragement for anybody, you don't have to be Episcopalian to do this, when you walk into a room or a setting, look around, see who is there, who is not there, and ask why.
Why is
the group that I'm in not as fully representative of all the people in this nation, in this world, as it can be? And what do I need to do to make sure that that representation takes place? That's an action point for everybody that will help us all to further along in achieving that beloved community that God calls us to.
And
that picture in Revelation 7:9 of all people, all nations, all tribes around God's throne. Everybody's there celebrating the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. So.
Well,
the question.
One of the ways that we usually end this show is by asking the question, "What's giving you hope right now? What's giving you hope?" So I'll leave you all with that. What's giving you hope, Mother Kim?
I was actually sitting here thinking, you know what? I'm filled with hope. What's giving me hope is the fearlessness with which the Episcopal Church is engaging topics of race and racism. Yeah. I've worked, UBE works closely with the Sacred Ground developer.
Yes.
Katrina Brown.
Yes.
And we're trying to get that curriculum engaged by more of our communicants within the Episcopal Church. It is life transforming.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful that that has taken off by like wildfire.
You know, I know for those who are in our local Memphis listening area, I know that there are churches within Episcopal churches within our Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee that are working with that curriculum right now. And you can be in, for folks who are listening right now, you can look forward to hearing more about the Sacred Ground, racial reconciliation work that's being done at the beginning of 2022 on Faithfully Memphis. We'll be able to talk a lot more about that and how people here in Memphis can engage with that wonderful, important work. Swayzu, what's giving you hope?
I think communication. You know, I think the communication that I've been engaged in with so many people is something that is objective in many cases, and it's something that people that I've come in contact with are willing to listen. And I think you know, this whole trajectory of time could be something that while there are silos and you know, some people maybe not interested in having those conversations, there seems to be so many people interested in having constructive conversations about race, about opportunity, about improvement. And yeah. And of course, education is one of my big areas of interest, and I think that whole area just seems to be going right now.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing some things at the University of Memphis, in fact, that with the middle school and the high school that we're adding, and different things that
I got to give a shout out to the campus school where my daughter is right now.
Oh, okay, she's very good.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there are a lot of positive things happening on that front.
And the Barth House Episcopal Center.
Oh, awesome.
Where Dr. Claibon and I like to, we get together on
Wednesdays. We were just there yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I couldn't make it yesterday. Yes. I was really sad, but that's another great thing happening the on North. The University of Memphis. Come on down to the Barth House on every Wednesday at noon for great prayer. And you will more than likely get to hang out with me and Lavani.
Yes. Well, I can tell you what gives me hope is when I look in the eyes of our youth. And I want to focus on our college age youth now. I see hope in their eyes, particularly some of the youth who participated in our outreach programs and Project CARES and seeing what they've been able to do.
Yeah.
And I'm reminded of a portion of the poem, the quote from Marianne Williamson, and that our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure.
Mm.
And there's a portion of that poem that talks about we are all meant to shine as children do.
Yeah.
We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. And so I see hope in the eyes of our youth, but I see hope also in the individuals in the community who are willing to sacrifice their time to actually encourage and uplift and educate our youth.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, I want to thank our guests who were with us on Faithfully Memphis today, the very Reverend Kim Coleman, who is the national president of the Union of Black Episcopalians, Dr. Lavani Perry Claibon, and Swayzu Claibon. I don't want to I got to correct it. Oh, that time.
I can tell you as much as he went through with when I was getting mine. He has.
Yeah,
one too.
I mean, it's an. I'm gonna.
It was. He I'm was the best.
I'm gonna confer upon you an honorary doctorate today.
Yes, he was the best supporter. Always has been. I'm very blessed to have a wonderful husband.
Well, I am very blessed to have had this wonderful conversation with you all this morning. Thank you so much for joining us on Faithfully Memphis this morning, and thank you so much all who have joined us on the podcast or on the radio show. If you like what you've heard, please share the show with a friend. Share it with one person who might really engage with what we're doing here. You can find past episodes of Faithfully Memphis wherever you listen to podcasts. We're on Spotify and Apple and all the things. And it is tremendously helpful for us if you can go on to Apple Podcasts and leave us a if you like what we're doing. Don't go over there if you don't like what we're doing, but go over there and give us, a 5 stars, leave us a review. That really helps us to get the word out about our show and what we're doing. Thank you so much for tuning in today. And on behalf of the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee and Bishop Phoebe, I'd like to say stay safe and stay positive. Bye.